The Defense Information Systems Agency plans to bring up new technology to improve the security clearance process by September. What that technology is and how it will make a difference is unclear because DISA chose to use what ought to be known as the black hole of contracting, that is, Other Transaction Authority, or OTA. In his weekly feature, The Reporter's Notebook, executive editor Jason Miller writes about why agencies should be paying attention to the growing use of OTAs for common products and services. Jason joins me now. And Jason, I guess, why are agencies using this special authority for ordinary stuff?
Well, it's interesting, Tom, because OTAs are not new. In fact, DoD's had the ability to use OTAs since 1994. But really, only in the last couple years has the popularity of this approach grown. And traditionally, OTAs are used for research and development, the type of thing where you're like, we know we want to solve this problem, but we're not sure how to do it, so we'll pay for a prototype or we'll pay for a pilot program. But it's really been around research and development. What the government, and specifically DoD, over the last few years have been doing is using OTAs for more commonly bought products and services because they are outside the normal federal acquisition regulations process.
They must be a more streamlined thing then.
Meaning the process or what you're buying?
No, the process.
The process is more streamlined, more commercial-like is what they call it. But the problem here, Tom, is there's no transparency into the OTA process, so there's no protests. There's no idea of you got to release the RFP through a multiple award contract because it's all based on prototyping. And that change happened in the 2015 National Defense Authorization Bill that gave DoD the ability to go from prototype to operational capabilities without having to go through a whole new contracting effort. And I think that's why the idea of OTAs, Other Transaction Authority, starting to really raise some flags in the private sector as well as the government sector.
I imagine the contractors look at this, and when they see something that is commercially available and DISA uses the OTA approach, that could look like an abuse of the OTA.
And I think that's part of the concern that I'm starting to hear within the government. Agencies like OTAs because they don't have to go through this normal, rigorous, in some ways, arduous process of the federal acquisition regulations. But then again, a lot of people argue, well, there's a reason why that this process has rigor to it. And I think people would also argue that it doesn't have to be arduous, but agencies make it more arduous than it needs to. And what DoD and others, and NASA, NIH, Homeland Security are among three civilian agencies that are really starting to look at OTAs and use them, is they're saying, well, we don't have to deal with this, and we don't have to worry about mistakes, and we don't have to worry about all the potential protests. We can just kind of go around. And I think that's a big concern. The other piece of this is, Tom, there's this feeling that, well, we can use OTAs to get these innovative companies that don't work in the government sector, the Silicon Valley or these Austin companies or wherever they exist nowadays, so to speak. But what we're finding is the big boys know where to find the OTAs too.
Sure. Now, Congress also gave DISA the big hairball of the background investigation service they were taking away from the Office of Personnel Management. So DISA had two things. They had the OTA and they had this new task they have to, I guess it's returning to DOD. Why do you suppose they used the OTA for this particular congressional mandate?
You're right, Tom, on the fact that they have to re-modernize, if you will, this background investigation service, the technology behind it. And a lot of people thought that this NBIS, National Background Investigation Service, would be this big project. And in fact, I talked to Tony Montemorano from DISA. He's the acquisition executive. And one of the things he talked about was, in fact, we have a lot of the capabilities already in-house, and only the case management system is what they're using the OTA for. And he goes, currently, they put out an RFI back in September. They've accepted white papers from this consortia, which, by the way, Tom, the consortia, 500 companies belong to. And let's be clear, when you belong to a consortia, it's an application, it's a fee. So this is not just, oh, let me get a few innovative companies. And when you look at the list of companies who belong to the consortia, it's VMware, it's Accenture, it's Amazon, it's Esri, and it's 490 other companies, most of which you've heard of, that have access to these other contracts like the federal supply schedules at GSA or any sort of multiple award contract.
That's more than IAC.
But the reason why they went with OTAs, from what I can tell, is the streamlined process, the agility, the flexibility, but also it's not protestable.
Well, yeah, that may be the top of the heap for reasons to begin with. We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. And zooming out from DISA, you have found data out from Bloomberg. that the popularity of OTAs are growing.
I did a panel a few months ago with Kevin Brancato from Bloomberg, and we actually talked about this, the growth of OTAs, and he had told me, hey, Bloomberg's going to have some of this new data. So they finally put it out just recently, and what Bloomberg found was between 2012 and 2017, so over 5 years, the amount of spending on OTAs went from $1 billion in 2012 to $2.3 billion in 2017. In fact, DOD has accounted for most of that spending. Between 2015 and 2017, when Congress changed the law, it went from $695 million across DOD to $2.1 billion across DOD on OTAs. And that growth is just incredible. In fact, one of the biggest companies that have won most of the work through OTAs is Analytical Services, otherwise known as Answer. And why? They manage 10 consortia. So they get a piece of that pie every time someone in the consortia wins an OTA contract.
They're almost like their own schedule for OTA contractors.
Exactly. It's like a pass-through. They're getting money. There is cost to administer and run the consortia. Nobody would argue that. But the fact is, here's Answer getting three times more money than anybody else under OTAs. And you have to ask the question, is this really saving the government money? Is it really finding innovative firms? Is this really good for the government? And or, Tom, are we going to have another $500 hammer, $600 toilet seat, whatever example people like to put out there about why government procurement is bad when they go through these OTA processes? Because there is no transparency. It's not protestable. There's a lot of questions that I think people have around OTA.
Sure. Have you sensed any curiosity on Capitol Hill over this particular effort?
Well, in fact, the opposite. They want this effort. People on the HASC and SASC, House Armed Services and Senate Armed Services Committees, are promoting this use of, hey, why can't we just buy more like commercial? That's where the e-commerce provision came in the NDAA, otherwise known as the Amazon provision. There's a big push to give DOD and other agencies more flexibility.
And while we have you, you're also writing in your notebook this week about a reorganization at Health and Human Services. Briefly explain what's going on there.
This is called Reimagine HHS. And of all the agencies that we've done reporting on around reorganizations, it seems to me, again, this is just on the surface, that HHS is doing several things correctly. First of all, they're coming from the bottom up and the top down. Seems like a lot of these agencies, Interior and USDA as two examples, are really top down. This is what we're going to do to change, like it or not, federal employees. It seems to me because HHS has told me that they, over the last few months, developed a work group, 150 career-level members leading these work groups. They came up with 6 work streams, 10 initiatives, each led by a career person. Again, the career person being involved and bringing the mission up, bringing each piece of it up, whether it's contracting or legal or IT or HR, that is what makes the bigger difference versus being done to them and being told what to do.
It could be, too, that HHS is really a confederation of some very large entities. You've got the FDA, you've got CMS,
yep.
You've got NIH, you've got the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. These are big entities in and of themselves. There's very little of just pure HHS.
But I think you can make the same argument with Interior and USDA as well. There's a lot of big entities, whether you talk about BLM or the rural development, maybe not as big as CMS or not as big as CDC, but they're still big within that agency. And I think what's happening, and I'll give you a perfect example in grants and contracting world, they're saying, how can we become more efficient? Well, maybe we could use robotics and artificial intelligence, not to get rid of jobs, but to make the current workforce better and make the processes more streamlined.
Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. We'll have to read more. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Check out his notebook. It's now online at federalnewsradio.com.